Well, very briefly, just want to say, as we prepare to hear some testimonies, Psalm 105 calls us, says, remember the wonders he has done. To remember the wonders he has done, to reflect on all that God has done for us. And we love to do that here. And so on our first Sunday of the new year, we need to listen to a few testimonies. And so our first one is from Matt Wilson. You can come on up, Matt. Matt and his wife, Angie, have been attending since the end of September. And we've had lunch a couple times and just got to hear his story. And I thought, you might want to hear this.
Good morning, church. So yeah, my name is Matt Wilson. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. My wife, Angie, and I, and our daughter, Evelina, have been coming since about the end of September. I was able to attend Vinny's course on emotionally healthy spirituality at the Fridays, and I've gotten to know many of you through that experience, but that's needless to say, most of you I probably don't know. And so I was somewhat surprised when Pastor Joe asked me to share a testimony here this morning. I was eagerly volunteered, though. My wife and I both believe in the power of sharing the testimony, sharing God's faithfulness and power in our lives. And we've been greatly encouraged ourselves hearing others' faith journeys. And so I'm honored to have the chance to share that with you this morning. In Joshua chapter 4, right after the Israelites had finished crossing the Jordan River on dry ground, starting in verse 4, it says, "So Joshua called together 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe. And he said to them, 'Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of tribes of Israel, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever.'" In our family, we like to talk about memorial stones and the importance of bringing our little stones out of our pocket and sort of reflecting on them. And the new year is definitely an appropriate time to do that. And so I'm honored to have the opportunity to share with you just a few of my own river crossings. So quickly, first, a little about me. I grew up in a Christian home. I prayed to receive Christ when I was 8 years old. I was baptized and did all the normal church kids things, VBS, Sunday school, youth camps, and the like. I went away, far away to college, though, and during those years, and really most of my early 20s, I would say were characterized by spiritual ups and downs, mostly downs. As I tried to make my childhood faith my own and exercise my own freedom and independence. And I'm going to spare you the details of that period, though, sufficing to say that a good portion of that time, I wasn't very obedient. I indulged the flesh and was very double-minded in my relationship with God. But thankfully, the Lord is faithful, and he's determined that none should escape his flock, including me. Amen. But the part of my life story that I want to share with you this morning began roughly 10 years ago when I began to seriously reflect on the kind of person I was becoming and the trajectory of my life. I'd finished an MBA and had a well-paying job in Baltimore. But shortly thereafter, I began to feel that God's call on my life was to leave my career and to pursue graduate studies in philosophy. Now, mind you, this wasn't totally out of the blue. I had minored in philosophy in college and loved it. And any time I was at a party and someone played the game, if you could do anything and money didn't matter, what would you do? I'd say I'd teach philosophy. But to actually do it, that was scary and much too costly. I mean, you've probably heard the job market for humanities professors isn't exactly roaring right now. And the sheer amount of time and energy and money it would take to do that was daunting. So it took about 6 years of praying and wrestling with the Lord from about 05 to 2011 when I finally mustered the faith and the courage to leave my career and enter graduate school. That beginning felt very much like Abraham in Genesis 12, when God told him to leave everything that was comfortable, his family, his people, his home, and to go to some place that he would show him. But where? Well, God didn't exactly tell him, and that felt very much like my journey too. So in the time remaining, I want to tell you about two particular experiences that happened to me along the way, two rivers that I crossed, so to speak, where God spoke to me and then delivered on his promise. The first was in 2012. I was attending Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Chicago. I went there to get a master's in philosophy of religion because I figured that no PhD program in philosophy was going to take some corporate guy with a marketing MBA very serious. And so I figured I probably needed to prove myself, and if I was going to get a degree, well, I knew that philosophy was often hostile to Christian faith, so I thought, well, I ought to do it in a place that will be upbuilding for my faith. Well, that seemed like a great idea at first. It was until my second semester at Trinity that I realized they had like a 0% track record of placing people in PhD programs. And it also turned out that PhD philosophy programs didn't think very highly of seminaries, especially evangelical ones. I'd heard some horror stories of other students having to go and get second master's degrees in order to get into PhD programs. And so I kind of came to this crisis point where I thought, well, maybe I should leave the program and move over to Loyola Chicago. And then it happened. I came out of church on a cold Sunday morning in January and went into my car. And I felt the Spirit of the Lord come on me, and I became very emotional. I started crying. And he told me that he wanted me to stay at Trinity because he wanted me to know that he was the one who made the way. And he knew that if I left and did something else, I would think that it was on me. So at that time, he also brought a verse to my mind out of Isaiah chapter 45, which had been very instrumental in me even leaving my career to begin with. It's the story where Isaiah prophesies 200 years in advance of a Persian king named Cyrus that God raised to power in order to bring Israel back from exile and restore the temple. And there it says, "This is what the Lord says to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I take hold of to subdue nations before him, to open doors before him so that gates will not be shut. I will go before you and will level the mountains. I will break down gates of bronze and cut through bars of iron." God reminded me that he can cut through bars of iron and break the strongest barriers, and he wasn't sending me on this journey alone. So I stayed at Trinity, and don't get me wrong, I often doubted this word from the Lord and sometimes wondered if it was even real. But a year and a half later, I was one of four out of over 100 applicants that got accepted to Baylor's PhD program in philosophy. And there's much more to that story to say, but suffice it to say that God was the one who made the way. So that's my first memorial stone. It's a testimony that God goes before us, that if he calls you to something in this new year, that he'll make the way. Or if he called you to something and you're wondering where he is now, maybe it's a reminder that he's here with you. The second memorial stone is about 5 years later. It was 2017, and I was towards the end of my PhD program at Baylor. I had met my wife, Angie, and we had a daughter on the way, and I was starting to have a lot of anxiety about the job market. For several months, we had been having a number of stressful discussions about what was next for us. And Angie really didn't want to leave Waco. I'd seen a few of my classmates go through two or three academic job cycles without getting jobs. And I was spending all this time online looking at job postings instead of writing my dissertation. And underneath all that anxiety were questions and thoughts like, well, you know, what if I don't get in a job in philosophy? Like, what will this all mean? I knew I wasn't as good as even some of my classmates. I mean, how am I ever going to get a job? What if the only job is available at some terrible place to live? And I think underneath all that anxiety betrayed sort of an underlying belief or attitude that I was on my own again. And I had struggled for a long time with what some call an orphan spirit, which is basically a kind of posture or attitude of the heart that believes that one is just alone, that God's not there. And So it was on the morning of Sunday, January 7th, 2017, when God broke through and spoke to me in a very profound way again. My wife and I were leading a small group at our church, and they had these monthly life group leader meetings that I never liked to attend. And so I was standing at the back of the room, sort of annoyed I was there. It was towards the end of the meeting, and I decided to sneak out and go and finish out worship. And I was just standing there worshiping the Lord, and he just spoke to me, and he said, "You can stop looking for jobs. I will bring the job to you." What? I mean, what did that mean? Nothing more. He didn't say anything more than that. Just, "I will bring the job to you." And I have to tell you, I was very puzzled by this. Surely I have to at least send in an application. I mean, the job market is such that they put these online postings and you send them your CV. I didn't know what to make of it. It gave me some hope, though. And the spring and the summer passed, and I was working hard on my dissertation. And then in early August, I got this email from someone at Harvard University asking me if I would be interested in a position. They were looking for someone with a PhD in philosophy and who also had managerial experience and who could help run an academic program at Harvard called the Human Flourishing Program. Not by coincidence, it turned out that the guy who emailed me was a man named Jeff Hansen, who I had met by sheer coincidence back in 2012 at a conference. I think he's one of two or three people I maybe met at that conference, certainly the only one I remember. And it just so happened that he happened to know my dissertation advisor, and they were talking about this opportunity, and my name had come up. So within a few weeks, Angie and I were flown out to Boston. I interviewed for the job, and well, the rest is history. But can you believe it? God brought me the job. I didn't apply to a single job. I know friends, literally, who apply to 70 or 80 jobs trying to get, you know, academic posts at places, and sometimes multiple years in a row. And God just brought this to me and set it on my lap. And the amazing thing is, he told me he would. So I don't know how many of you have recently checked the Harvard website, but there's not a lot of PhDs from Baylor University there. So I'm not here because I deserve it. I'm here because of the Lord. And of course, that's not the end of the story. Angie and I, we got here in May, and the adjustment has been difficult and challenging at times. And I still don't know exactly why God has brought her here, or what his full plans or purposes are for us. But you know, we want to live like Abraham. We want to follow God to the places that he will show us. And we know, though, that he goes with us. He goes before us. And so I hope that's an encouragement to you all today. Those are just two of my memorial stones of rivers that he's dried up in front of me. We do have many more stories, though, like that, and we look forward to getting to know you all in the months ahead. So with that, I'll just hand it over. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Great. Awesome. Great. We'd love to hear those kinds of stories. And I do have to say, since I minored in philosophy, one of my friends, he said, me, you, and Dan should probably get those shirts that say, "It's okay, I have a philosophy degree." And that always works. When your car is broke down on the side of the road, it's good to know that somebody there has a philosophy degree. There you go. Well, for our next testimony, we're going to hear from Dulce Flores. Dulce, you can come forward. Dulce has been coming here for quite some time. She comes with her husband, Kevin. And so we're looking forward to hear this story, this testimony.
Good morning, everyone. Kind of overwhelming being up here. So please bear with me. Well, some weeks ago, Pastor Joe asked me if I could share a little bit about my life and my journey through the Christian life and basically everything. So it's been amazing. It's been an incredible reflection, because I even called my mom and ask about some dates and some things that came to my mind, and God made me realize that there was really it was important for Him that I came to this world, because I was born, I grew up in a big family, five sisters, four brothers, 10 kids. Yeah, I know, it's scary. But the amazing part of this part of my story is that I was born in the middle of a time of war. There was a war there for like 10 years, I remember, if I'm not wrong. And due to this, my father, he had to leave his family. I say his family because I wasn't born back then. And he was absent for five years or so. And with no communication at all, no phones. I was born in El Salvador. It's a third world country. Right now, if you go, everybody has a cell phone, even in the mountains. It's amazing. But back then, there was no communication. So it's been amazing for me to realize that, even that, because my mom, he had to deal with everything, and God was always protecting her and my family. So they went through some refugees, and finally they were relocated at the neighborhood where I was born. So, thanks God's will, my dad came back. He found his family, and some years after that, well, 1 year after that, I was born. So it was meant to be. And two more girls after me. So if I'm not wrong, when the last of us was born, he became a Christian because he was an alcoholic for several years. And through this alcoholic group, non-alcoholic group, he was invited to a church. He found the Lord. And when I was like 9 or 10 years old, I remember him starting to give us Bible studies. And he said that he wanted to make a difference with his three little girls. And he did. By this same time, that's when I became a believer, and I felt that it had much more sense than what I was learning at that, because my mom used to take me to Mass and all the Catholic things for the First Holy Communion and everything. But at this same time, this organization, American organization called King Castle, they are located, they have cities in El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Honduras, I think. They are focused on preaching and teaching about Jesus to children. So there was a church from God's Assemblies, I think you call it, Asamblea de Dios. Yeah, that. And so they work with them, with this church denomination there. And it was Christmas time, and they made a party, and they would give us toys. I remember getting my first real Barbie there. Yeah, I love that. But at the end of this party, they would make a presentation and a dramatization about the crucifixion. And it blew my mind to realize that they were talking about the same Jesus that my father was teaching me. So that was the first time I invited the Lord to my life. Then we even had Sunday school at my house for some years. And as my foreman was saying, that I also had up and downs because becoming a teenager and being a Christian didn't seem the most or the coolest thing to do. And so I tried to be like a believer, but with some distance. And I remember thinking, no, I don't think I'm bad. I don't do drugs. I don't do this or I don't do that. That seemed like very, very bad sins. But the more that I tried to keep this voice inside me and the voice of my dad saying, I have told you the truth, now you know the choice is yours. Because he said that he wanted us to be baptized when we were really conscious about what we were doing, just like he did. Then it was kind of struggling because my mom, she still is Catholic, and it was kind of difficult being Christian with her being there. And there was kind of arguing at the moment, but finally she accepted it and she realized that we didn't do anything bad. So after some ups and downs, when I was like about 20 years and I was in college, I was studying English. And I met some friends. They were young as me, and they went to a church. So they invited me to these youth groups on Saturdays. And then I realized that being Christian wasn't too boring. Like I had been trying to think before. So after less than a year going there, I got baptized, and it was amazing when my two little sisters followed me there. They were also baptized there. We were happy, but at the same time, we get this beautiful gift. My daddy passed away. However, God knew that it was the time. He died happy because he knew that his little girls were in good hands. So I learned to be healed, totally healed by God, because I didn't feel like First I did, like I lost my father. But at the same time, I learned to be fulfilled by my Father in heaven. So, same with my two sisters. And believe me, it is ironic to think that it's not easy, because my name means sweet in Spanish, but before knowing God, sweetness was not one of my qualities. Really. As of today, my temper is one of my bigger struggles. But I learned to depend only on God. I learned to pray and to work for what I wanted for. And everything I asked for, I have gotten it. I asked for a career. I finished my career. I asked for a job that I wanted. I got that job, and at that job, being there, I met my husband. I asked for a husband when I was becoming 30, you know, 30 and single is kind of, so I was like, I'm not going to ask for anything on this birthday, I'm just going to ask for a love that came from you. And I met my husband in that same week. So Back then, I wanted to think that it was a coincidence because I was trying to be more realistic. But now, I know it was no coincidence on that. So, another one recent testimony about how I have learned to forgive and I keep learning every day comes along with the struggle we had with my father-in-law a few months ago, because after the miracle that he was very healed and responded very well to all the medication and he was taken to the hospital right on time, after that came the financial struggle, because private hospitals in El Salvador, he lives there, it's very expensive. So we were talking about a lot of money. There was a point where we had used all the for savings and everything we had. So, and I remember being not worried or not scared, because I knew that God was in control, as he always is. And I reflected about that when Pastor Joe talked about Psalm 121, and he mentioned that God takes comprehensive care of us. And he has been doing it ever since. So, a few weeks before that, like by the end of the summer, I had a very difficult fight with one of my brothers, the one with a kind of work. My husband works with him, and we even live together. We shared a house with him, and it was a fight. Like, I don't remember fighting with him, like, many, many years ago, like that. And it was so serious that we spent 2 months without speaking, not even a single word, living together. So it was scary for me that I wasn't feeling this desire of forgiving him, or worse, being forgiven. So after praying a lot and sharing it with some good friends that I have met here, and with my sisters, who has always been my little sisters, they have always been like my counselors too, I started to pray for this desire of forgiving, because being in this big family and being like the first believers there after my dad, it has become like a challenge that we have to be the ones making a difference, marking a difference between, and it's kind of more difficult when it comes to family. I don't know why. Maybe because we're very similar. So after that, I knew that the best strategy to use was not maybe trying to talk to him or trying to get him say, I'm sorry. I knew that wasn't going to happen. So I decided to change my attitude. And I decided to start being kind. And it was well received. We started talking. And some days after that, it was like nothing had happened. So when the time came and we needed financial help, he was the one there. And I don't think that anybody more than family would do something like that for you at no cost, not even mentioning it later, because he was a Christian before he even got baptized, and I still pray for him to come back to the Lord. But one of the positive things I have learned from him is that when he helped someone, it's like he forgets about it. And it's like when God forgive us, and he forget that he forgave us. So that's the kind of forgiveness that I've been challenged to learn and to practice. And if I hadn't taken the decision of making a difference, like we have always been struggling to, I don't know, I can't imagine in what other way we could have received the provision that we needed to fulfill all of those financial needs. So I praise the Lord for that. And one very important thing that I want to point here is that when I found out about the Christmas Operation Christmas in December, that's when I realized about this amazing thing that happened in my neighborhood like more than 20 years ago. So I really want to encourage you to continue doing that, because you really can mark and change the life for kids just by doing that, like this person did with me, my sisters, and all the believers that I still know remain after that day. Thank you.